Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Microphone.
every week you try and record it without a microphone. It's ridiculous. It's really like silly. Me trying to take a selfie with the camera facing the wrong way, and I'm going, I can't see myself.
Hello. Welcome to the last episode of series 2 of Postcards from Midlife. During the past 11 weeks of this second series, we've been chatting all things menopause, parenting, partners, husbands, kids, cats and dogs, as well as midlife, sex, sleep and lots of health and beauty conundrums as well.
We hope we've kept you informed and a little bit amused with our goings-on and our silly shenanigans. Oh, I love that word, shenanigans. Recording this series during lockdown has helped us both enormously, and we hope it's kept you entertained as well. Now, though, we are at the last episode of Series 2. We will be back, so please watch out for news about the next series on your podcast provider or on our Instagram or our Facebook group. And if you've missed any episodes, you can catch all of Series 1 and all of Series 2 still available on download.
So Lorraine, do you want to tell everyone what's coming up in today's finale? Because it's a bit of a corker, isn't it?
Well, it's not that we've saved the best to last, but we do have something of the best for you for the last bit of Postcards from Midlife. We spent very recently a wonderful couple of hours with Catelyn Moran in her garden, socially distanced, talking about her brilliant new book, More Than a Woman. She was funny, she was honest, she was very, very candid about the battles and challenges that she is facing in midlife. And we talked about everything from parenting, where she talked very honestly about parenting her daughter who had an eating disorder and why she is now a Botox convert.
And we'll be finding out if you're a convert too, Lorraine, won't we? Because you've taken the leap and given the old Botox a little go for this week's tried and tested section.
Yes, the things I do for midlife women.
And it's another first for you with our teen topic, isn't it? Because it's all about empty nest.
Can't
and
talk
what
about
happens
it.
When our kids actually leave us after all those years of threatening to leave us, and then they finally do go and leave us. So we're going to be talking a bit about that later on in the show as well. First, though, we thought we'd have a little look back at what we've learned in this series and the things that maybe stood out for us on a personal level. Lorraine, what struck a chord with you, do you think?
Do you know what I've liked most about recording Postcards from Midlife and talking to all those wonderful women that told us their stories, you know, whether it was Kate Garraway, Beverly Turner, Marion Keyes, is the enormous community that we seem to have built around us, because there's a gap. There's a place where women need to go to tell their midlife stories. I seem to have got people swimming in the open water.
You've got me swimming in the very cold Tooting Lido last week.
Good for menopausal
Lovely.
Women. That's been great to see. Lots of women awake at 4 o'clock in the morning. Isn't it funny to think about that? I used to think about that when I had the babies, that there's probably women all over London wide awake at 4 a.m. like me. They're kind of the same for midlife women. We just done an episode on sleep, so hopefully we can help cure that.
That was a bit of a game changer for me, that episode.
Was it?
And just the one thing, because it's Catherine Pinkham talking, giving a very
sleep
different
drive.
Approach to insomnia and the sleep drive. Mm. And just that whole stuff of do not look at the clock when you wake up. So I've been doing that in the last week, and I've been getting back to sleep much quicker, I have to say, and being less stressed about the quality of my sleep rather than the quantity. So I really recommend anybody who hasn't listened to that episode with Catherine Pinkham, they should do that.
Over the series, and we've interviewed experts, we've interviewed HRT experts, cancer experts, sleep experts, women who've got amazing stories to tell and sad stories to tell. And throughout the whole of it, it really, the three things I think I've learned have been that you should always get a second opinion, find
sure.
your voice, ask for a second opinion, and that you are not in any way alone. There is a community out there. Our Facebook community has been particularly supportive of some women asking questions. And also, I think in midlife, there is perhaps this need to slow down little. Maybe it's just me, but I think we learned that over the Zoom period, didn't we, Trish? I remember you saying to me at one point, let's try not to do that all in one go. Let's give ourselves a bit more time to do that, which in our previous lives, editing magazines,
rushing everywhere. Rushing, indeed.
We might not have done. I like that idea of slowing down. What have you learned throughout?
Well, I think sort of on the back of that, really, I think the kind of finally adjusting to life as being self-employed, which we both are now. And, you know, because I think we've both been institutionalized from working for companies for probably 3 decades. And, you know, 30 years of that's a long time. And you can kind of come away feeling a bit obsolete. But again, that kind of community that we've created around the podcast has made me realize just so many women out there doing so many amazing things with their lives, with their second acts, the things that they want to do next, the things that they're already doing. And I think that's kind of really, it's going to be a key one for us. I think something we're going to pick up on in series 3, because, you know, unfortunately with COVID, with unemployment, women in midlife are likely to be the worst affected by unemployment, getting back into the workplace, I think, in the coming years. So I think that's something that we really want to look at, isn't it, Lorraine?
Yes, I think, Trish, I've come to realise it's a whole new journey. It's a kind of, there's a pause and it's a second era, this starting again in midlife, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I had this very bizarre dream literally 2 nights
ago.
This
is what I know. Trish going off on a giant tangent. Off you go.
It's rather strange because it involves Ricky Gervais. It doesn't involve sex, but it involves Ricky Gervais.
I didn't ask if it involved sex, did I? Didn't need that bit of information in your midlife years.
Well, it's very strange. So my dream was all about sort of this sort of acceptance of my new life, and that I, you know, don't have a job, but I am doing it for myself. I am self-employed. I am freelance. I'm making it happen. And I think I've sort of in the back of my mind, I've been sort of anxious about that. And in my dream, Ricky was sitting on a sofa on a precipice and he was calling me to him. And he was saying, accept it. This is right for you. You will be all right. Blah, 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 blah. And I had to jump across the precipice to get to Ricky to get my information. It was quite strange. I have been watching Afterlife. So that
might have you watched Afterlife? Yes. So that's the kind of subliminal messaging there.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, on the last episode of Postcards from Midlife, it's time to hear from our special guest, Catlin Moran. Catlin is a columnist at the Times newspaper, as well as being the best-selling author of the books How to Build a Girl, How to Be a Woman, and her latest hit, More Than a Woman, which chronicles her experiences and philosophies on the complexities of being a middle-aged woman. Here's what happened when we caught up with Catlin in her home.
Welcome to Postcards from Midlife, Catlin. Thank you so much for having us and for inviting us to your home.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure. As a freelance writer who works from home, I'm terribly chronically lonely. So every time I can lure someone over to my house for 20 minutes and pretend they're my friends, that's basically my job.
And we are sitting in a very special kind of pod in your garden. Tell us about the pod.
It's a giant pod.
A giant circular glass.
A pod in a pod.
Yeah, with chairs and tables in. It's my writing pod.
But we're here to talk about your fantastic new book, More Than a Woman. Congratulations. We both absolutely loved it. Oh, we've spent
made
a lot
me
of
laugh out loud
laughing
and crying
out loud,
and everything.
Howling. How's the reaction been so far?
The tone was set by, I went on Lorraine at 8:30 in the morning. We had a really lovely chat, and at the end of it she went, I'm going to reclaim the word vulva really loudly, which was amazing. But apparently the subtitles had it that she was saying, I'm going to reclaim the word vulvo. So there was a lot of hard
opinion about this, Trish, wasn't I?
Very confused. And that kind of set the tone. So it's been lovely. It's all been back to back, but the response already, there were so many people who were going, I ordered it, it's arrived this morning, and I've taken the day off work to read it. And then many of them saying, I took the day off work to read it, and then obviously within 20 minutes of opening the book a child came and asked me where its shoes was, so I will be having to read it later, because that is the story of being a middle-aged woman.
And tell us about, because it's a really interesting structure for the book. You've done it in the sort of day of a life, a day in the life of a sort of midlife
by hour,
woman by hour. How did that come about, and the sort of concept for the book?
Well, it's based on the medieval books of hours, in which each hour is apportioned to a different task in medieval times. And also because when I wrote How to Be a Woman, that was a chronological memoir from the ages of 13 to 30. And sort of each chapter was an incident, like, you know, the first time you get your period, first time you learn to masturbate, sort of having an abortion or whatever, to which I could then sort of go off into a rant or talk about things. And then in a really good way, and I'm not bitter about this at all, so many other people stole that format for their books. Like, there are so many how-to books out there. And I was like, well, I can't go back and do it again now, because it'll just look like I'm copying copying them rather than being the originator. So then it was like, well, let's do a day. Because that in a nutshell is the problem of being a middle-aged woman. Like, in a 24-hour period, you have to do everything for everyone, but you're still you. You're still the 13-year-old or the 20-year-old or the 30-year-old inside you. But suddenly it's just assumed that you'll be brilliant and capable and willing to do everything. You're looking after the dying, you know, your parents, you're counselling your teenage children through their adolescences and their crises. Your friends are divorcing and you're having to sort of sail off like the cavalry and save them. So yeah, I thought the 24-hour format would work quite well.
Do you look in the mirror and which age do you see when you look in the mirror? Because I always think, why are these people talking to me? I'm 18. I don't know anything. And what's this happened here?
Well, since what I've had the Botox, I'm looking at a very well-preserved 45.
It's
rather
very
than,
good.
It's good, isn't it? Tiny little natural bit. And funny enough, that's been one of the most controversial
this
bits
bit in the here.
Yeah, so it's the 11s in the middle.
The furrow line in the middle.
Yeah. So it's the 11s in the middle, then sort of around the jawline, because I've got very thin, very stretched skin. And so they just sort of around there, a little bit around the mouth and stuff. And it's just sort of a
But mentally, who
look.
Do you feel?
I'm still very much in contact with my 13-year-old self. Like, kind 13, of like, she's, that's my girl. I'm always talking to her. She's always talking to me. But I also keep in contact with my 60-year-old self. I think it's really interesting to talk to your future
that's
self.
That's how the book starts, isn't it? It really begins by the, I'm coming back to tell you.
Yes.
Which is sort of partly why we started the podcast, wasn't it, Trish? We wanted to be able to say, this has been a giant shock. Two very sensible women who've worked in media for a very long time, had lots of children between us. But I didn't see this coming.
No.
I didn't have even an inkling, even with childbirth, because everyone tells you the stories and you just think, oh, it can't be that gory, and it is. And blah, blah, blah. But this, I had no idea. Could you see it coming at you in any way?
No, God, I was absolutely the opposite way. I'd presumed that I had done all of the hard stuff. Like, people had come out of my genitals. Like, you know, I had finally worked out what my
You had actually built two girls.
I had made two human beings.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought by the time I got to 30, when I finished How to Be a Woman, I was like, right, I have chronicled everything that's difficult about being a woman, because those are the years where you work out who you are and how to keep yourself safe and happy. The rest of it's got to be easy. Like, the kids will be older, they'll be teenage, they'll sort themselves out, and I will just go for...
They can get dressed on their own.
They can wipe their own arses, I'm off the job.
Yeah.
And I just thought that it was going to be, my midlife was going to be a series of really lovely long lunches with gal pals, possibly in the Mediterranean.
Lovely, nice, big, funny named coffees with your teenagers in shops.
Yeah, exactly. Big cocktails, linen trousers, kind of. Elegance. I thought I was going to be really elegant and leisured and kind of and composed. And of course, that's not what happens in midlife at all, because...
It's worse than teenage.
Well, suddenly you are the fifth emergency service, because if you're a halfway sorted middle-aged woman, you are the one that is going to have to go around. You're the one that gets the knock on the door. You're the one that gets the phone call. You're the one that gets the email. Or you're the one that notices there's a problem and goes, let's talk about this. You know, it's almost like we're freelance troubleshooting in other people's lives.
Giant list going on everywhere.
Endless.
In your head.
Yeah. At least my to-do list is at least 5 pages long.
Did you know about perimenopause?
What
does that mean to you?
In the same way that I had heard that periods happen to you, but I was pretty sure they wouldn't happen to me, I was the same about the perimenopause. I was like, well, it's a rumour and maybe it happens in other countries, but it just doesn't seem like it's likely to happen to me. And then I'm perimenopausal now, and when it first started happening,
You're 45 now.
45 now.
Yeah, you're at the beginning of the
of a whole wagon
of
bullshit.
I'm telling you. We're in our 50s now.
Come out the other side. It does
get
better.
Yes, it's jolly. Yeah, it's very jolly.
Yeah, but we'd love to explore a bit with you, because we've got a list.
This perimenopause symptoms, and I just thought I'm going to run through, because this was the biggest shock to me. Trish got tinnitus.
Wow.
Which is a symptom. Yeah. Weird.
What?
Perimenopause.
You got the menopause in your ears.
Yes. Burning tongue. Have you had that?
Oh, have I? I get dry mouth. I don't know if that's...
I mean, everyone thinks hot flashes.
Yes.
Breast soreness.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They've been wibbly-wobbly bags of trouble since the day they were born.
Headaches.
Yes, headaches.
Gum problems.
No, thank God.
Muscle tension.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, that's being alive.
Tingling extremities.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, is that one of the
difficulty
symptoms?
Concentrating.
No, I'm all right for that.
Brain fog.
No.
Memory lapses?
No, but get to the bit where the furious rage overwhelms you and makes you want to kill everyone else.
Dizziness,
I've definitely got that.
Bloating, stress, incontinence, body odour, extremes of body odour.
I mean, I've had all of those all my life. I'm just like a pissy, farty problem.
Honestly, there are at least, what did Dr. Newson tell us, 36
34,
symptoms.
I think.
And if you tick more than about 10... which most of us will. You're in the perimenopause.
But it's difficult to know that that tinnitus combined with some weird sweating combined with something else is that. I just thought it was something that was happening.
I assumed I had a brain tumour, terrible brain tumour.
But I think
so dizzy.
The rage seems to be the thing that, from our Facebook group, from the listeners, that is the thing that we all have in common, the anger and the rage. And you wrote about that.
Yes, which had a huge response. I wrote a column about this for The Times. And like as someone who took a fair amount of party drugs in the 90s, it was like coming down off an ecstasy tablet, because like estrogen just makes you so fluffy and loving, and you know all the things that we think of as female, you know, you're forgiving and loving and caring and huggy and all this, and soft and lovely, and then you can feel the estrogen leaving your body. It drains out of you in the same way that drugs
do. I didn't know that was happening to me,
really.
But we've both found that a really good dollop of HRT has helped the anger and the rage just has gone entirely. And I don't know where you are
same
on
here.
That journey.
I had 6 months of furious rage and no libido as well, which was just
annoying,
and vexing fanny dryness. Yeah. So just like not someone anybody wants to hang out of. Yeah, it was sandy down there. Yeah. And I was just so us and friends and just went off and got the HRT. It took a while for them to balance it, but the difference, and also they found that I got an underactive thyroid and I was massively deficient in vitamin D.
What about testosterone? I had none.
Yep, no testosterone. I didn't have anything. I was just sort of like an empty bin, really.
Exactly. It's like the lubricant, the petrol, everything gone, but still manfully, as they say, struggling on.
Womanfully, let's face it.
Struggling on.
Yes.
Yeah. And how different do you feel?
Pretty much back to normal now. Mm. And in a way, I'm like, oh, would it have been good to stay as angry as I was? I mean, I certainly, during that time, before I got the HRT, sorted out a lot of very efficient household rosters. It was very much like, okay, I am never going to unload the dishwasher again. That's the revelation that this has given me. Here's the roster. You're doing this. You're doing
this. You people, I kept saying. You people.
Yes.
You're part of this now.
Oh, the feminist rants.
I've got perimenopause, and this is the situation.
Literally screaming the word patriarchy every time I get in the kitchen.
No estrogen. Yes, screaming it so much that Mabel, who's I've still got a nine-year-old, when she was about seven, wrote a whole list of things that are sexist in the house. And I said, why have you written this? And she said, because you keep talking about this really loudly, really loudly. And I'm just so cross about all the emotional labour.
Now, you've always been really very open and kind of happy about your body, the fact that you love your body and you're still really happy with it. You've written that in the book.
Yeah.
But we've noticed that you've started calling this period of your life the hag years.
Yes.
Drudge, old crone, your words. What's going on there then? How does that equate
They need to
with...
be reclaimed in the same way that when I started talking about feminism in How to Be a Woman, at that point, people just did not use the word feminism. We were still saying girl power instead, which was, you know, it was great that the Spice Girls came up with that and, you know, little girls were running around saying girl power, but that only means buying Spice Girls records and being friends with your friends, whereas feminism is this whole other thing. So the purpose of that, of How to Be a Woman, was to reclaim the word feminism. Similarly in this, I just want us to start talking about middle age and give middle-aged women more options. And whenever you take a pejorative and turn it into something positive, like kind of then there are less weapons for people to hurt you. And the thing is that, like, you know, it's one of those things, you know, victors write the history. When men generally have written history books about hags and crones and witches, it's all seen very negatively. But if you look at the lives of hags and crones and witches, it's brilliant. They're these independent women who, like, you know, have all this knowledge of herbals. They have their gangs of other witches and crones that they get together with and cackle and make up plans. They're the wise women of the village. They wear what they want. They don't give a fuck. They hang out with their animals. They grow their gardens. And I'm like, a hag life. Like, kind of, I love the word. I think hag is such a powerful word. If you're just looking someone in the eye and going, I am a proud and happy hag. What can someone come at you with? Like, kind of like, it's like, I'm way ahead of you.
How do we change the narrative, though? Because sometimes I just think the word menopause really upsets people and they can't hear it out loud. It just makes them put their hands over their ears. And then how do we seep it into society so that people don't, we make fun of ourselves as well. Sometimes that's a problem, I think, the hot flush, all the greeting cards making fun of middle-aged women. How do we change it? How do we make it better so that women don't go to the doctor and say, I've got the menopause and I'm a bit ashamed of it? Because I get that's the sense we get from a lot of women.
This is one of the sort of intents, hopefully, in More Than a Woman, because, like, at the moment when we think about women getting older, we just presume that you are a formerly young person who has unfortunately stayed alive
terrible
long enough to start being old. It's like you've lost stuff. You lose skin elasticity. You know, you're losing your perkiness. So we think of it as loss that you can bravely manage. You've lost your fertility. And that's why I was so interested in talking about hag years. Like it's a literally different life. You turn into someone else. You have a third act to your life. Because then, and that's why, again, I came back to the hag thing, because previously it was the three phases of a woman's life were maid, virgin, then mother, and then crone. Mm-hmm. And we still think now, like, you know, I mean, God bless J-Lo, but she's still basically presenting as a mother or a maid. She's not going into her crone years.
Yeah.
Madonna's not going into her crone years.
No.
And what do you do when you, well, I mean, you know, everybody has different interests as they get older, but it is a huge relevant cliche that as you get older, you get into gardening, you know, you get into hill walking, you're really tightly bonded with your friends.
It does actually, like, make a difference, though, all of it, though, doesn't it? It's like the yoga and the not drinking. It is the viable alternative,
all of
unfortunately.
This.
Now, as you're getting older, and happens with our listeners on Postcards from Midlife are experiencing this, your teenage girls, well, your girls are developing in front of you. And then I look at mine and think, oh, look at that gorgeous, tight little skin there. And her, what those shorts,
perky,
they're amazing.
Little
perky
little bosoms.
Nothing's hanging around her knees. Bit jealous of that. Little bit melancholy. Bit conflicted. Don't know what to say. How did you deal with that with girl? You've got two girls. So
yeah.
How did you
well,
deal?
I mean, I was lucky.
It's
I'm
like
putting
it's
that inverted.
Underlining it for
well,
you.
Well, not really, because like when I was their age, I was a size 22, and with NHS glasses, really terrible skin. We were so poor that I didn't have a coat. I was wearing a dressing gown, and I was wearing my dad's old clothes because we only bought stuff from jumble sales. But when you're that big, particularly in the 80s, there just aren't secondhand clothes in that size. So I was just wearing my dad's shirt. I smelt because my mum didn't let us buy deodorant because she thought it would give us cancer, and I was just in a house of sort of like poverty and despair. So so everything's been, you know, physically it's been an improvement, like kind of like when everybody else is mourning like the perkiness of their youth. I never had perkiness. My tits grew downwards from day one. They are womble noses.
Oh,
like kind of that was
nose.
Always I've always had chub rub, like kind of like, you know,
chafing.
I've always had chafing problems. Like my arse has never been an arse shape. It's kind of it's kind of a cauliflower thing. And like, you know, I love all of that, but I've got the luckiness of not mourning a lost youth, because I look so much better now and feel so much better in myself now.
But it's not jealousy, really. It's just that giant noticing of everything changing. It kind of, for me, it just brought it really into sharp focus how much everything was changing in front of
And it's also because you don't appreciate it at the time, do you? If you're a gorgeous 20-something or a gorgeous, you don't necessarily appreciate it then. And then you look back and think, oh, God, I was hot.
But
and
I'm mindful that I don't want to mess them up around it ever. I don't want to say things that might make them think they're, because they're so beautiful, whatever they look like, however. And they're just amazing teenage girls. They're just the most brilliant thing.
Definitely don't say anything about it, because if you're saying to them, you look so beautiful now, look at your young skin, look at your perky ass, then they will be like you in 40 years' time
going,
oh my God, that was when people were commenting on my ass when I was young. No one comments on my ass now. And that perpetuates a cycle of abuse.
That is a very good piece of advice.
I have many advice about body positivity with teens. I've had to learn the hard way to be really careful
about
what you say around
it?
Girls.
Now, sharing the experience of your daughter's eating disorders and mental health issues was incredibly moving in the book. It was really sort of stopped me in my tracks. Why did you feel it was so important to reveal what must have been a really intensely personal and harrowing experience for you and your entire family?
Yeah, and it's her experience as well, and I was very aware of that. She told me to write it because I had made so many mistakes in the first couple of years. So she was ill for 3.5 years. And
did you make mistakes, or were you just...
No, I really did. Because you're not given advice. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to put it in the book. You're not given advice for how you deal with this. And first of all, you start doing it as a parent. So you're trying to parent your way out of this problem, this mental illness. So you go, well, should I punish you because you're not eating? Well, you can't punish them because they're punishing themselves. You can't treat them because they're completely shut down and in negation of all life and they feel guilty. But you're not told how to deal with that. So you're going, okay, well then, you know, as I put in the book, then we started trying to be really rational with her and give her these TED Talks at like 2 o'clock in the morning, like, you know, you are feeling terrible at the moment because you're not eating, you need to get nutrition and then you will feel better. That doesn't work. And then we went through the clown phase where we were trying to jolly her out of it, and like she'd come back and we'd be like jazz handsing in the hallway going, we're gonna play buckaroo and I've made you a fabulous soup and I've bought you some pet rats and everything's gonna be amazing. And that doesn't work either. All the parenting things don't work. You have to become a mental health professional, and you're doing that 24 hours a day, and there are things you should say and shouldn't say. And if you get, and they are so hyper aware when they've got an eating disorder, if you say literally the wrong word, that's the rest of the day gone. And it takes you a long time to learn this. So I was hoping I could fast track, you know, anyone who reads this to a different place.
Have you? What's been the response?
Oh,
because
insane.
There was an extract, wasn't there?
Yeah, we serialised it in the Times last week. And the biggest shock was the amount of people that I know or people that I know of who were emailing me and DMing me going, it's happening to us, we've got it, we are too ashamed to talk about it, we're trying to keep it a secret.
There's an enormous amount of shame, isn't there?
And that was why I wanted to talk about it, because our generation, the parents now, we grew up in an era where mental illness was seen as shaming. You didn't talk about it. And it was also presumed, and you still get pockets of this in the mental health industry now, where they think it's the parents' fault or it's the mother's fault and you've caused this illness. So much. And of course, as a parent, you're blaming yourself anyway. Like, you've got just, you're just like, this must be me. But for her generation, the younger generation, they don't have these stigmas around mental health like we do. No. It's much more open, which is one of the reasons why she was like, you've got to write about it, because, like, you know, kids of my age, we're all helping each other and sorting each other out. It's your generation that needs the help on this. You need to start a conversation where you talk about this and people can finally be out in the open about it, because it's just the same as having a child who's got leukemia or a broken leg. If that had happened to you, a physical illness, you'd be talking to your friends about it and telling everyone and trying to get all the help that you could. But often if it's a mental illness, the family keeps it as a secret, and the child sees that and they feel, go, well, this must be my fault, this is a guilty secret, and it makes it even worse.
Well, they want to make you happy, so they don't want to cause any problems.
Totally. And that's when they go away and self-harm, like, you know, that's when you see your, you know, they, you know, so that, and that's all the communication, you know, when you find your child with, like, cuts all up its arms, that's its way of saying, it's telling you that it feels sad, but it's too scared to say it to you because it doesn't want to upset you. And once you learn all these things, that sort of the ways that people in intense distress are trying to communicate with you when they don't think that you can listen to them properly, then you're like, well, why are we not all taught to listen properly to children who are in distress?
Active listening is the premise of all family therapy, isn't
And that was the thing I did, because I are generally very good with a very open family, very, very close. But the one thing I could not do, and that I've had to learn the hard way, is deal with sadness. If someone's sad, I'm like, let's make it better. Let's make a joke. Let's just think about fabulous things. Like, that's what I do to myself. And for someone with a mental illness, that's torture.
How is she now?
She is now so fully recovered. She's just like, she's been very strict about what I can and can't talk about. I
mean, but that's what wonderful for parents to know, because often with eating disorders, it's almost impossible to it's very rare to get someone fully recovered. So
I couldn't find
there
a single
promise.
Yeah,
and
I couldn't
hope,
find a single hopeful story. I combed every single resource available when she was ill, and I couldn't find a single positive story. And that was another reason why, because we've been so lucky. Because you know what? You want to read the stories of the lucky people when you're going through
this. Well, that's why I think it's so important about the book, because the fact that coming through the other side is possible will be really helpful. Let's talk about the humour, because that interests me. So you're just saying that the humour is what got you through, in a way, and you write it out. It's a cathartic thing. If you're not you, with this God-given talent to write amazing things, how could we help a woman get through all those feelings? Because I think that's the difficult, you know, you can write it out or you can paint it out, but if you're just going through a very normal life, you're in a normal job, how do you get rid of all of that and make it, keep it outside of you so it doesn't ruin the inside of you in midlife?
Well, I think a lot of it is, well, there's two things. There's the negative stuff that you're dealing with that feels like it's trapped inside your body, and
that's a shock. That's
a huge shock. And like the key fact to remember, and part of the reason why this is such a difficult phase in life, is that no one looks after middle-aged women. Like, no one's going to come and ask you how you are.
Well,
no one's going to come and sort
them.
It out.
Even their doctors don't believe. And there's a survey among GPs, older GPs, saying that people laughed at them at work when they talked about their menopause. Older female GPs talking about menopause at work, being laughed about by others. So what's hope have I got going in?
And this is a cultural thing, and this is why, like, you know, I believe in political change and legislation and stuff, but culture has such a huge part to play in changing the way what we think is normal. And, you know, all of culture is basically a battle for who has control of the word normal. And generally, when culture has been dominated by straight white middle class men who've been to Oxford or Cambridge, a menopausal woman is nowhere on the cultural radar.
Well, they call the economy menopausal when it's been 2 years ago. They made a statement saying the economy was menopausal, so broken and rubbish.
Thanks. Well, exactly. But
I'm going to kill you!
But as we see more women, you know, generally, you know, there are more and more women who are sharing their stories and talking, it does change you know, that's what my hope in anything that I ever do is, that we can start stretching the definition of the word normal so that we are constantly talking about what it is to be middle-aged. So the bad feelings that are trapped inside you, I found, and I wrote this whole chapter about this, and I apologise in advance for saying this sentence, but I'll explain why I'm saying it. You need to do yoga. I apologise.
I
apologise because...
She made me do it. I was like, you can take your bendy roly-poly, oming, lululemon, knitwittery somewhere else, because I am not doing yoga.
But it works, right?
Yeah.
It works.
I'll tell you what, it works
something to do with the parasympathetic nervous system.
Yeah, it gets you really high. And also, like, if you look...
That's a better way.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's how I sell it to people. Because the reason I apologise for saying it is because you get told all of your life that when you're stressed and tense, you should do yoga. And people who tell you to do yoga look really smug and you want to kill them. Yeah, right. Yeah, I do it. But when I realised, the big moment for me was when I realised that if you just didn't call it yoga, if you just called it fucking about, because that's what it is.
Some lying down.
Yes. Lying down and breathing deeply is a viable, you're doing a sport when you do that if you're doing yoga.
Well, you're having an hour out.
And it's just going back to doing what we did as kids. Kids run in a room and do a roly-poly and they're upside down and they're stretching their legs. And then we're told constantly, sit straight, sit still. And then you have a tense conversation with someone in accounts in like 1997 and you clench your buttocks and hold your breath to get through it. And then
I've
you realise 20
years
later,
years.
Literally. Yeah. So when you finally start doing your deep breathing and going, I am going to consciously
so
relax
annoying.
My ass.
It works.
You suddenly have a flashback to 1997 when it just, when you started clenching and never stopped. Why I do wild swimming, you know, swimming in a cold lake.
Oh, like you kind know of, about me and the slits literally stop me going properly. Properly
it's
mad.
It's my favourite thing, and if I don't do it, I get really tense. It is like a drug.
My favourite thing that I saw at the swim up at Hampstead Ponds, and there was a, she must have been 70 or 80 year old. Oh, she looked like she was a high court judge. She was brilliant. Huge sort of bonnet on her head, a swimming costume, and she's going down the rungs into the lake, and it's so cold. So the first leg goes in, and she goes, now I don't care about my job. Second rung down, now I don't care about my kids. Third rung down, and now I don't care about my fucking husband. And then she just swam off into the lake.
I love the ponds.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, but talking about husbands, I think your chapters on marriage.
We like the sex chapters,
sex.
Trish. Get to it.
I have
we like
to say,
it.
In terms of hope,
we're going to have some maintenance sex next week.
I think that the divorce rates in the UK are going to go down after women. Seriously, because I think the way that you. You know, we know that they come bottom of our to-do list, right? And it's so easy amongst all the emotional labour stuff that we're doing, and we get really angry because they're not doing it. They do kind of, you know, they just get buried in all of that. But you just, the way you write about Pete and your relationship is just really
He's a lovely,
lovely.
Man.
He really is a lovely man.
So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. Well, it's technically quite difficult because, like, it's really noticeable generally.
Does he mind?
Oh, no, I pass everything past okay. him. And he's yeah. also a writer as well, and he wrote a yes. memoir about his childhood recently. So we talk about the technical difficulties of talking about writing about people that you know, and I put quite a lot of technical technique into what I do, although hopefully you can't see in that. Generally, we as a species are not supposed to write about our personal lives and our marriages. Like, there is supposed to be a secrecy and an omerta around that, and that's part of the problem, because all the movies that you see when we talk about love, it's the beginning where you meet each other, you meet in a cute way, you have a couple of rows, then you get married, and then boom, the stories stop. And it's seen as like impolite or rude or an invasion of your own privacy or boastful or indulgent or all these different things if you talk about the realities of trying to stay together for the rest of your life in something that's half a business and half like the founding of souls in children. And like, well that's why it's so fucking difficult then, because what yeah. can you template against? No one's actually telling you what's happening,
what will happen after 40,
or how to, you know. And going, you know, it's a genuine surprise to me when after I'd been with my husband for 7 years that I still really loved him, because the only things that I'd seen written about long-term relationships were people going, yeah, well the bloom wears off after a couple of years and then you're just kind of putting up with each other, and that was the only real things that I'd seen written yeah. about marriage. And I was like, I'd never read anything about people who were still together and really loved each other.
But I think the affection, there is such incredible affection that yeah. you show, and I was thinking, oh, I need to be more affectionate to Neil, and I've actually started being more affectionate to him. I think I might have given him a stroke on his back in bed last night.
Talk to me about your mum's menopause then, because when we've done pieces on this on the newspapers that I've worked on, all the doctors say, well, you need to ask your mum what she went through, because you might mirror that from a genetic point of view. I mean, I couldn't possibly ask my mother about her menopause. She'd go into...
I don't even know if my mum had... Because my mum had 8 children, so she was constantly pregnant. I mean, yeah. she might even be pregnant again now. She just seems to be pumping out humans endlessly. She's like a salmon. She
lots
sort
of estrogen.
Like, kind of like... So yeah, I'm kind of not really in contact with my parents anymore, so no. I don't know. So the chances of me ringing her up now after 5 years and going, so, what's up with your
but
uterus?
Do you look back? I suppose that you wouldn't look back then, because Louise went talked about her mum taking all her undergarments that were strapped, her corsets off, and just throwing them in a tip because she couldn't bear it. And that
later,
yeah,
oh yeah, the roll on, roll off ones.
I'm done now. I don't have to wear any of this shit anymore.
Have you got any midlife role models? We'd love to know about the women that you think are kind of killing it out there.
I don't know. God, do I mean, there was that cliched thing, isn't it? Your friends, like, kind of like, all my friends are absolutely storming it. I don't know, really. I can't think
What do you think is going to happen in the next 5 years, then? Because I'm here from the future to tell you things will happen.
Yes. Oh, really, what, in terms of the menopause? Yeah. Oh, go on. Go on. Clue me in, because I thought I would just stay on HRT for the rest of my life. Go on.
Yeah, well, no, but you will. You must, because it's good for osteoporosis and everything. Well, I got the massive doom and gloom at 49, having had... taking HRT for panic attacks, which I'd never had in my life. I couldn't possibly understand. I thought people were making a giant fuss about things. And suddenly I was completely unravelled over a whole year. And absolutely brilliant now because of the HRT and everything. But when I got to 49, it started to come back.
Shit.
Even though I was on it. Well, this is because obviously the levels had to be changed slightly. But then I got this massive rebirth feeling of kind of, I don't have to put up with any of this. The kind of no fucks are given phase of it, but at the same time the kind of, oh my god, I've only got 30 years left, the death maths phase.
It suddenly only 30 gets more Royal Variety performances for me.
But you just no Olympic medal for trampoline. Ain't gonna happen. But you do start going through that bit again. I remember 45 being the turning point with the whole sorting it all out, and then 50 being another. How do you think you'll deal with that?
Well, I'm in constant conversation with my future self. So by 60, I want to be... She lives in Wales. She has a small holding. She's rewilded it all. She has a jotter next to her computer where she's writing down each piece of wildlife that she's seen every day. She's tried to reintroduce beavers and otters. Yep, she's writing. She's wiry. She's tough. She's going up a mountain and rescuing a sheep that's fallen down a crevasse and carrying it back on her back. She's got a forge. She's making her own tools. She's got a kiln. She's making her own crockery. I'm going to be
Is she doing a bit of witching? In a forest.
She's super witchy, all of her enemies are dead, her voodoo is strong, she has triumphed over all, and she's fermenting a revolution amongst other crones and hags.
Catelyn Moran, genius, thank you very much for coming on Postcards from Midlife.
My absolute
in your
pleasure.
Pod.
It's been so lovely. Stay a while, don't leave.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
So we've come to that time of the year where thousands of parents are going to be packing their teenagers off to university. Some of them are going to be left with empty nests. Some of them are going to have their family dynamics change with the rest of the family staying at home. And that's going to be you, Lorraine, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I know.
How are you feeling?
Well, it's very, very odd because I just thought it would be one of those things we just get through, like every rite of passage with children. But my eldest, who's just turned 18, will be going to Bath University. We'll be driving her up. I've had so many lovely messages of support from my friends this week as well, who already been there, been a year ahead. And I've been looking at the Facebook group, What I Wish I Knew About University, where people who've already taken their sons and daughters have posted up their rooms and how they've decorated them. And then I've just had these very, I mean, my husband says that I'm living in melancholy corner this week. I've just had these really odd moments where I've seen women pushing buggies and I've just thought, why am I in this stage? Who took me out of that stage and put me here? I want to go back there. I feel happier there. That's my happy place. And suddenly I'm in a bit of life that doesn't feel real or new. And she's got this little kettle and teacup we bought her when she was about 8 because she loves a cup of tea. She's just... loves a cup of tea. And I saw her putting it in the pile to take to university yesterday, and I just thought, oh no, she's going to take her cup. Oh. That means she won't need it because she won't be here. And we went off to, we ran out of time to go to IKEA and all the other places that everyone recommended. We went off to Sainsbury's up the road, and which is good because it's all in the sale, everything, and got all her bits and bobs. And it was just the weirdest experience.
Yeah, because we actively encourage our children to become independent. That's what we do as parents, isn't it? But that experience of letting go, I think it's going to be very painful when you're just not part of their daily lives and you don't have them as these constant companions. I remember I was the first to leave home for my brother and sister, and I didn't think anything of it at all. Didn't think about my mum helped me get my stuff together. It was all lovely, and she just burst into tears as I left, and it was so unexpected. I don't think I've ever seen her cry. I had never seen her cry in my life. And I just, for the first time, I thought, oh my goodness, actually, yeah, that is quite a big deal for her.
It's the end of an era.
Yeah, it really is.
You suddenly realise that this time has properly gone. There is no getting it back. There's no sort of, a friend of mine texted and said that she sees women with buggies and she thinks, maybe I could try again. Perhaps I went back and did it, I would do it right this time. Oh, but then you have this realization, there is no try again. This is end of days.
This is it. And well done you. And I think there's practical worries about them leaving us, isn't there? About their safety. Are they going to be able to take care of themselves? And have you kind of put in place sort of things about keeping in touch? Because a girlfriend of mine was telling me that when her daughter went last year, they agreed they would call once a week, and I think within 2 days the daughter was calling her like four times a day on WhatsApp, asking her, oh, how do I switch this kettle on, and things, you know, things like that. So
well, I think it very much depends on your teenager. So my eldest is very capable, she can cook, she loves cooking, she sorts things out, she's doing mechanical engineering, she's incredibly practical. I feel she's going to be okay. My 16-year-old, who leaves in a couple of years' time, obviously doesn't like cooking, is very creative and probably the opposite personality completely. But I don't know, I mean, I assume people will just look after her, but I don't think you can prepare them, or you can prepare you for it, really.
No. But what about the other three then? Are they...
Well, the dynamic will be terrible.
The dynamic will be different. Are they... They're probably going to miss her as well. Have you talked to them about how they're feeling about it?
Well, no, they're just carving up her room at the moment. Oh. They're just bidding for the TV. She's got a telly in her room she bought. And they're just asking, can they have this, can they have that? None of which they can have in case she doesn't like it and she wants to come back. I think with four, each one of them has an individual relationship with the other one. So it will affect the dynamic, I think, and it will affect the times of what we do and what we choose to do. We're going to do a big goodbye meal for her. She loves Italian food. So I felt that I had to do one thing to really make it clear to everyone that she was not going to be here, mark the occasion. Otherwise I felt like my 9-year-old would be kind of, she does a lot of art and crafty type stuff with her, and that will just stop because she just won't be around. She won't come on holiday with us in October for half term.
A friend of mine, the same friend actually, was saying she's got two daughters, and the second daughter has really, really flourished and come into herself since the older daughter. Because I think you've got those, as you know, inevitably that one child is going to be more dominant, louder, you know, whatever, than the other. So I think they felt that was actually really positive. So although they were desperately sad about it, it was sort of almost time, you know, it was that tight. They needed to go, the daughter needed to go, the other one needed her space.
Exactly. Yeah. We have these sort of touchy moments in the kitchen where she's clearly in my way now, or she's clearly, we know we've come to the end of rubbing along together.
And maybe a bit of healthy falling out, just because she goes, it's probably quite a natural, good thing to do. I think for people, you know, and I'm thinking about this myself, you know, when mine both go, the impact it has on your relationship, if you're in a partnership, you're living, because that's something that I think you need to think ahead about. Well, certainly the advice that I have read, and websites like Relate, they have some good information on there, because, you know, you can start feeling a loss, you know, feelings of loss, lack of purpose, and that can actually affect your relationship with your partner. So it's kind of, you know, giving that some space and thought and trying to work out, it's almost like renegotiating a relationship or letting it settle back in to itself in this new dynamic.
I've been allowed to go on Snapchat so that I can follow her.
Yeah, okay. good.
Because she replies to Snapchats, but she doesn't reply to texts or WhatsApp.
You can trace where she is in Exeter. I can just you'll know where she check. Can stalk her.
Yeah. I can just check what's going on. She's also quite, she's going to Bath, so she's quite near her grandparents. Oh, yeah. So that's quite good as well.
So for anyone who is looking at this scenario, maybe in a year or year or two's time, it is probably worth getting prepped now for it. And there's some great books out there. There's a really good one called Starting University, What to Expect, How to Prepare, Go and Enjoy. That is aimed at kids, but there's a really nice chapter for parents in there about how you address the gaping silence after the weeks and months of noisy, intense preparation. And that's by Melissa Scallon. And there's also a very sweet little book called 50 Things I Wish I'd Told You, a life skills book by Polly Powell. And it's just got lots of little short, sweet little things. It's actually quite a nice little gift, I think, to give to your child as they're departing. And it's got everything from little hangover cures and sewing basics to four simple pasta recipes. And it's a really nice little parting gift, I think, a little bit of mum for them to take with them. Right, Lorraine, the time has come for you to spill the beans on the Botox. How did it go?
Well, this is a biggie, isn't it, for our tried and tested. And the reason I had it done this for this particular episode, so it's the last episode of Postcards from Midlife, is reading Catelyn Moran's book, Catelyn, who we just interviewed. So when she wrote her first book, How to Be a Woman, which was kind of a feminist manifesto, she was, to use her own words, the Botox police. She inferred that it was somehow letting the sisterhood down if you have Botox. Now, in her new book, obviously, she has reversed that decision, because once one hits 40, everything is a shock and one reverses one's decision about many, many things, doesn't one? So I thought I would go and do it, because between my eyebrows at the age of 52, I really just wanted people to stop saying to me, what's the matter? Why are you so cross? Are you sad?
Yeah.
Are you tired?
Well, Marion Keyes said exactly the same thing, didn't she, in the first episode of this series, where she's just fed up of the kind of, you know, people thinking there's something wrong with her because she's got these little frown lines.
So the who, what, why, when, where of all of this is, so the who is me, the why is the frown lines. And I went to see Dr. Sam Bunting, who is a cosmetic dermatologist who works in Harley Street.
And friend of the show.
Friend of the show, who we interviewed earlier on. Now, Sam's got a really good reputation. She's qualified. She is a professional. I think when you do something like this, you've got to go somewhere where you can trust it and somebody is qualified. Basically, Botox just relaxes the muscles around the frowning, the line area. So they learn not to make that, so the creases disappear. It lasts up to 3 months. It kicks in within 3 to 5 days. So the muscles relax within 3 to 5 days. 5 injections, 8 minutes, all over.
And how much lighter was your wallet at the end of it?
Wow.
That's the question.
If I was a math genius, I could work this out. So that would have cost me 5 injections, the 2 lines, to get rid of the 2 lines or to soften the 2 lines, £325. Now, it's an expensive 8 minutes, or it's a cheap 3 months in terms of skincare. I mean, I think at this age, if you want to invest in your skincare and you want to try something and you've done the allergy test, et cetera, and you can do it, then it's a viable thing to do.
I think it's a long-term investment as well, isn't it? Because if those lines aren't working away now, if you decide to stop doing it, say in 5 years' time or 10 years' time, it will be better because you haven't got those frown lines already there.
She does, you know, and any good practitioner, dermatologist will do this, sit down and talk about why. Why is it you want to have it done? And often there are a lot of other reasons that come up underneath, aren't there? It's a very emotional time. I remember my hairdresser once telling me that when women come in and say, I need to have my hair all cut off or I'm going to dye it a totally different colour, it usually means there's something like a divorce or a new baby, something is happening in their lives.
There's a website called Save Face, actually, which is a girl. Approved list of practitioners, but you know, you're saying that Sam sat down and talked to you should have a consultation beforehand. You should have cooling off time. You should be able to, ask about their insurance. There's a whole list of things. So it's really worth checking out beforehand. Yeah, exactly.
So Trish, I have gone forth and bravely tested this for women.
I feel like you want a medal for this.
I do. I really do.
It's quite a big deal, isn't it?
I feel like I stepped over a line and no one's here to greet me with any kind of cap.
I don't know, because so many of us have been there and done it before, maybe.
That's so annoying. I like to be first. Anyway, what have you been trying and testing?
This isn't something I've been doing for a week. This is actually something I've been doing for quite a few months because I've been trying to see if there's anything I can do to improve the appearance. You know, I'm a bit fixated about my sunspots and those kind of splodgy freckles that all join up on the face.
Discoloration. What's it called?
Yeah, it's called hyperpigmentation, which is basically dark spots, sunspots and skin discoloration. And it's essentially caused by UV light pollution, but hormones. So a lot of women in their midlife fluctuations, and you can also get breakouts and inflammation, and it basically triggers the release of excess pigmentation in your skin. So I've been doing this three-step plan that I read about. First thing is you need to use a vitamin C serum in the morning because it has an antioxidant effect and helps with the effects of sun damage. And I've been using Balance Me Vitamin C Repair Serum, which costs £29. Then I've been absolutely religious about not going out without a broad spectrum sunscreen containing an SPF 30 or more. And again, our friend Dr. Sam Bunting, I love her flawless daily sunscreen, which is £29.
She doesn't ever go out without sunscreen.
No, you can't, exactly, or hat. And then there's a nighttime treatment, which I've been using Ren's Overnight Glow Dark Spot Sleeping Cream, which costs £49. And it's a really lovely nighttime moisturiser, but it's got this added benefit because the ingredients target just the actual dark spots rather than, because some treatments can sort of treat your overall face, but I just want to kind of sort out these kind of dark spots. And so I started using it in May, so it's been about 4 months now. And I have to say, I do think it's made a difference. And I actually did a little before and after photo of some of the splodges. And I do think that they look less pronounced. And just generally, I've got a sort of slightly more even skin tone, which is really nice. But I think
it's difficult when you're fair, isn't it? Like, you and I are basically see-through, aren't we? Celtic in our...
Exactly. And so those spots, I was really kind of self-conscious and uncomfortable about them. But if you want to get rid of them altogether, you have to do something more hardcore, which is a laser pigmentation removal thing. So again, must get a very qualified practitioner, and that will kind of zap you the spots, and they'll go a bit red and then go darker and flake off a bit after a while. I have done that in the past, and that's quite successful too, because it does, because sometimes the damage or the pigmentation is much deeper in the skin level. So that's what I've been trying and testing and feeling quite pleased actually with the old.
So we've both got new faces.
Brand new faces.
Not new. Just a bit old shinier.
Now it's our last little trip down memory lane for a while. And what have you been feeling nostalgic about, Lorraine?
Well, bear with me on this, Trish, because I'm not normally an interiors person. As you know, I do not have the eye for interiors. But if I say elephant's breath, mouse's ears.
Yes.
Farrell and Ball, is it?
Farrell
Malarkey
and Ball,
to you?
Yes, very nice.
So grey, for years and years and years, grey has dominated. Can't believe I'm saying that sentence. Grey has dominated the interiors world. Every house you go into, grey, 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 grey. And then when I used to get fashion shoots handed in to me and the background was always grey, and the team would always say, oh, it's because everything stands out from grey. It looks amazing. And I'd say, yeah, but it's grey.
It looks
Stop
dull.
Doing grey.
Yes.
It looks very dull. But actually with interiors it does. But anyway, grey is gone. Do you know what is the new grey?
Oh, I know green was there for a while.
Sage,
but it didn't quite
sage
make it.
There.
Sage, yeah. No, it's not sage though, is it?
No, I'll tell you what it is. It's brown.
Oh, you are joking.
And the reason that is a nostalgia noodle is because brown is the colour of the 70s, is it not?
Definitely.
I mean, it is the colour of the 70s.
For
My
sure.
mum had a full-length brown sheepskin coat that she never wore and we weren't allowed to touch, and it sort of hung up in a cupboard and I used to stroke it. She had a maxi dress that had these massive brown cuffs and brown collars.
Yep.
I mean, everything was brown.
Brown flares. I remember flares. Many pairs of brown flares in our household. Yeah.
So now you've got to do the house brown. I know about this because... the wonderful blogger, and she's on Instagram as Mad About the House, Kate Watson Smythe, who is absolutely brilliant. You should follow her if you want to know about interiors. She's very down to earth. But she said, gone is grey, brown is back, but you have to tread very carefully. It goes with things like pink, apparently. And if you're wild and you've got every kind of special magic interior powers, you can put it with orange.
I'll be looking forward to seeing what the names are of these luxurious paints. Pooh Brown?
Pooh Brown.
Instead of elephant's breath.
What would you think? I just think it does look quite nice. Some of the stuff that I'm seeing in the magazines and stuff
It's not a 70s take on brown, is it, interiors? No,
it's slightly darker,
I would say. Okay. I'm going to let you go first with that one, Lorraine. We'll see how it looks in your house.
What have you noodled this week?
Well, a bit different, but also back to the 70s when we used to do, do you remember BAGA gymnastics badges?
I remember it sadly, Trish.
Oh, why? Did you not get any? Did you not pass?
When I was a child, I was very enthusiastic about sport, but horrendously clumsy.
Oh.
And I spent quite a lot of time falling off that suede
The horse thing, banging
my nose, because I'd go at it with real enthusiasm and smack into it, fall off it. And I was like a tiny child, like a skinny little thing. And I remember the teacher saying, I just don't understand why you can't do this.
Devastating.
Mine's slightly
similar in the sort of damning words from a teacher situation. I was actually quite good at it. So there were badges, weren't there? 1 to 8. You kind of moved up the badges and you had to do different things like stand on one leg or split. Do a forward roll and stand up coming out of the forward roll. And then it would get more advanced with the splits and things like that. And I was actually quite good at it. And I did have a few of those badges. But there was a slightly unfortunate situation. We had to do a performance at a sort of school open day hideous like that. So, of course, that involved leotards, right? And the leotards that the gym teacher supplied them, and there were yellow ones and white ones. And she said, you can't have a yellow one, because I'm giving those to the girls with all the nice tan skin. And she gave me a white one that was almost see-through. And you can imagine how that looked
with the
Celtic blue skin. I was about 13. And needless to say, that was the end of the gymnastics.
So it's cruel, weren't they?
Imagine being in a gym with parents and kids looking like that and having to vault over something and hope that everything was, not showing.
Maybe we should do it now, Trish.
Definitely, because you can still do the awards. I looked it up. You can still do them. So maybe
we could get on the BAGA now without being told we're hopelessly clumsy idiots.
Yes, and looking hideous in a white leotard. Definitely.
So that brings us to the end of this episode and the end of series 2, in fact. We're both off for a big gin gimlet now, aren't we, Trish?
Definitely.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening. We really hope you enjoyed it, and I really hope that you found it useful. If you did enjoy it, please rate and review us on your podcast provider.
If you want to stay connected while we have a little hiatus, please follow us on Instagram and also join us on our Facebook group, as we'll still be bringing you all the latest midlife news and some of our silly chat on there as well.
And finally, apart from saying thank you to everyone listening and everyone involved, we'd also like to thank our wonderful producer, Lee, who you haven't heard from. Lee, can you give us a bit of your fabulous Scottish accent?
Hello, everyone. You won't be hearing this very often.
So Lee has been incredibly patient and very thorough, and she's been a brilliant producer. She has steered us through all of our virtual recordings, which I think is pretty epic for a whole series of Postcards from Midlife.
Thank you, Trish and Lorraine.
She's only 12 as well.
Exactly.
What drivel she has had to listen to.
She hasn't
quite
got a
frankly.
Clue what we're talking about half the time, poor thing.
Coming at ya.
And we look forward to seeing you for series 3.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.